I'm Indy Todd. Welcome to The Point. According to the Centers for Disease Control, one in three adults aged 65 and older falls each year. Falls are also the leading cause of both fatal and non-fatal injuries for this demographic. While maintaining muscle strength and tone is important for preventing falls, research shows cognition also plays an important role in balance. Joining us from our studios at WGBH in Boston to discuss the links between cognitive function, balance, and falling is Dr. Brad Manner. He's the director of the Mobility and Falls Program at Hebrew Senior Life Institute for Aging Research and Assistant Professor of Medicine at Harvard Medical School. Welcome to the program.
Thank you so much for having me today.
So we just mentioned the statistics on falls. Can you explain the reasons people fall and why those falls become more serious as we age?
Sure. So I think falls actually are a very, very complicated issue. There are many different reasons why people fall. I think, for example, as somebody ages, their blood pressure control might become less regulated, and so when we stand up, we might become dizzy and often faint, leading to a fall. Falls can also come from environmental challenges, so for instance, poor lighting. We, however, at the Mobility and Brain Function Program are really focused on how aging affects our balance and how those balance declines lead to an increased risk of falling.
Yeah, and so balance, of course, an important component to preventing falls. So how do our bodies maintain balance?
So that's also a very complicated issue, right? So balance is really controlled by a very complicated control system. So if you think about what it might take to walk down the street, right? Certainly we need to have adequate vision. We have to be able to sense our body in space. And certainly we need very strong and powerful muscles. But there's actually a whole other layer of complexity to this because as we're walking, we actually have to pay attention to the world around us, right? We have to kind of hold where our body is in space within our short-term memory. If the sidewalk becomes icy, we may have to make the conscious decision to slow down, right? So just the task of walking, which we oftentimes think of as a physical task, is very cognitively demanding.
The multitasking.
Yes, so, that's right.
Yeah. So what prompted you to look into links between cognition and balance?
This actually stemmed all the way back doing a PhD program at Louisiana State University. And we were actually researching the opposite end of the body from the brain. So we were looking at people that have peripheral neuropathy. And peripheral neuropathy is a disease caused oftentimes by diabetes that leads to sensory impairments that usually begin in the feet. Right? And that sensation in our feet is incredibly important for our balance control. But what we noticed was we could find two different people. They have very, very similar sensory deficits and even very similar muscular function, and their balance seemed to be very different. So one person might have very similar balance. If we test them in the laboratory, it might actually look quite normal, whereas the other person might have very severe balance disturbances and a history of falls. And so that really led me to think that, well, one person might be compensating somehow, and how might we compensate? And that certainly led me to think about the central nervous system and the brain.
So how did you conduct your research?
So certainly these days we have wonderfully advanced tools, right? So we can bring people into our laboratory and measure their walking and their standing very, very accurately. But one thing I think that we are particularly interested in is when we walk, we actually never just walk, right? We walk while doing additional tasks. We have to walk and talk to the people next to us. We might have to stand and answer a text or walk and think about our to-do list for the day, right? So we're always, as you mentioned earlier, dual tasking.
Right.
And we know from a large body of behavioral evidence that if you do two cognitive tasks at the same time, that performance in one or both of those tasks will potentially become reduced. And so what we do in our laboratory often is the dual task paradigm, where we have somebody walk and we very accurately measure their balance control. Then we have them walk again and do a secondary, completely unrelated cognitive task, for instance, counting backwards by sevens. And we can see then how doing that second cognitive task interferes with somebody's balance control.
That's interesting. Yeah. So this walking, talking, multitasking for the brain, can you talk about the different functions the brain undertakes to accomplish these tasks simultaneously? You've got a lot of different areas of the brain that are working at the same time. Is that...
Sure. And certainly the fact that doing a second cognitive task like counting backwards or talking interferes with walking means that these two seemingly unrelated tasks actually share some common pathways within the brain. And I think there are actually two different, very separate theories as to why and how our brain can dual task. So one theory is kind of operating under the assumption that we can actually do both of those tasks at the exact same time, so in parallel. But the issue is that we only have a certain total capacity of resources within our brain, right? So if walking takes up 50% of our resources, we talk and that takes up another 30% of our mental resources, then we should be able to do both of those tasks at the same time without any problem with performance. But if we go back and think about somebody with loss of sensation in their feet, right now when they walk, they have to pay much more attention to that source of sensory feedback. So the task of walking might now take 80% of our total resource pool. Talking then, if it takes 30%, there's not enough resources to go around, and performance in one or both may become impaired.
What's the second theory? Go ahead.
Yeah, so, sorry, the second theory is kind of operating under the assumption that we can't do two tasks simultaneously. We instead do them in serial. So while we do one task, we kind of have to put the other task on hold until the first task is finished. So we actually have to constantly switch back and forth. And so our ability to dual task actually becomes much more a issue of processing speed. So how fast our brain can process things and switch from one task to the other.
This says a lot about multitasking, doesn't it? When we think we're doing everything equally and perhaps not.
Yes. So I think there's a slide I usually use in most of my presentations that says multitasking, doing twice as much as you should, half as well as you could.
What does multitasking, how it becomes more challenging as we age then? What happens?
I think it becomes more challenging from the standpoint that our balance control becomes much more of a cognitively demanding task. So that means when we are walking, we need much more of our cognitive resources devoted to maintaining our balance. And so actually most falls in older individuals occur when we are walking and become distracted.
So you're the director, we mentioned, of Mobility and Falls at Hebrew Senior Life's Institute for Aging Research. Tell us more about that program.
It's actually a wonderful place to work in a very unique design. Aging really affects, for instance, all aspects of our bodies. But it doesn't really just affect our body, right? It affects our families because there are a lot of health-related decisions that families have to make as individuals get older. And aging certainly has big economic and healthcare influences as well. And so I think the Institute for Aging Research is kind of designed with that multidisciplinary idea in mind. So there are people focusing on how aging affects the brain. We are very interested in how aging might lead to a fall. But there are also people working on healthcare issues around end of life. And palliative care. And we even have just begun a new program called Geriomics, so the genetics of aging. So it's really a wonderful place to work, and we get people from lots of different walks of life all thinking about aging, but from very different aspects of aging.
Yeah, a lot of different angles there. So I imagine there's a lot of interesting research that's being uncovered there.
Yeah, absolutely. I think, it's certainly one of the leaders in understanding how aging impacts the individual and the people around them. And it's a wonderful, wonderful place to work. And I think what we are very interested in is how aging leads to balance problems. And I think our work has really kind of taken the idea that balance is actually a cognitive task to kind of ask the question, how does that actually potentially lead to an ability to improve our interventions, right? So this fact that balance is a cognitive task means we might be able to target cognition and the underlying networks of the brain to improve balance control in older adults.
I don't know if this is part of your research, but I'm just thinking, you know, we have these pathways in the brain and, you know, they start to die off at certain ages, but then you hear that we can build new pathways. Is it true that if you have some that die off, you might be able to create another pathway even as you're getting older?
So I think that's a little bit outside of my work, we certainly know that the brain is plastic, right? So from the day we're born to the day we die, our brain is constantly changing its structure and its function, and so certainly our behavior. And so I think the brain can certainly form new connections and even find new ways of kind of completing a task.
So through your research, you've identified a number of ways that we can strengthen the parts of the brain that do help us with balance. So let's start with ones that do involve multitasking, yoga and Tai Chi. Talk about that.
So Tai Chi has been something I've been interested in for quite some time. And it's wonderful to be in the place I am because there are leaders in Tai Chi research that we get to work with every day. And so I guess for those people who don't know what Tai Chi is, it's a ancient form of Chinese martial arts. And I think you can think of it as like a dance in slow motion, right? So we're very slowly transferring our weight from one foot to the other while doing very specific hand movements. But it actually goes beyond that because we don't just move. There's also a strong emphasis on paying attention to how the movement feels as you're doing it. And we certainly have to remember what's coming next in the sequence. There's also a strong emphasis on breathing and incorporating breathing into those movements. So it really is a mind-body intervention. And we are very interested in this as an intervention because we believe it can strengthen those connections between our mind and our body and improve the ability to dual task.
And is yoga equally as effective when you're looking at yoga and Tai Chi?
So we have studied yoga a bit less. I think there are certainly lots of very similar kind of emphases in yoga. We think Tai Chi, and the reason we've looked at Tai Chi is because it's very intuitively a functional type of movement, right? So our daily activities require us to oftentimes transfer our weight from one foot to the other while reaching for something, for example. And Tai Chi actually allows us to practice that. Just as an example, we have recently completed a study in 60 older individuals living in supportive housing facilities. First, I think one of the unique aspects of this study was the average age of those 60 individuals was 86.
Oh, my.
Half of the individuals went through a Tai Chi intervention for 6 months. And half went through a wellness promotion intervention for 6 months. Maybe most importantly, the attendance was extremely high, over 90%. We had very few people actually drop out of the study. And so everybody, even at an average age of 96, was able to complete the Tai Chi intervention. And we actually observed that people not only improved their mobility and balance control, but very specifically their ability to dual task.
Hmm. Interesting. Mm-hmm. We're talking about the links between cognitive function, balance, and falls with Dr. Brad Manner. He's the director of the Mobility and Falls Program at Hebrew Senior Life Institute for Aging Research and assistant professor of medicine at Harvard Medical School. Our toll-free number, if you'd like to join our conversation, 866-999-4626. That's 866-999-4626. Our email address is thepoint@capeandislands.org, and we'll talk more after a quick break. You're listening to The Point. We are talking with Dr. Brad Manner, director of the Mobility and Falls Program at Hebrew Senior Life Institute for Aging Research. He's also assistant professor of medicine at Harvard Medical School. 866-999-4626 is our toll-free number. That's 866-999-4626, our email address, thepoint@capeandislands.org. Along the same vein as yoga and tai chi is mindfulness and meditation, what do we know about the impacts of those activities on the areas of the brain that involve balance?
Sure. So we have actually begun to become very much interested in mindfulness and meditation. And I think the reason for that is because we know that interventions that allow people to learn and practice mindfulness can improve, for instance, attention. It can reduce the symptoms and severity of pain, chronic pain. We know that it can improve symptoms of depression. Mm. And so I think all of those elements are actually factors that we need to help maintain our balance control. But I think at the same time, I oftentimes describe our balance control system to people as an orchestra, right? So in order for the orchestra to get better, they have to spend a lot of time practicing together, right? So if the tuba section practices night and day together, they might get very great. But if they don't practice with the entire orchestra might not get better. So I think mindfulness and meditation, while we are sitting, there are many things that we can do to challenge our brain and to make our brain function better. I think, though, for it to translate into the entire orchestra being better, and balance control system becoming more effective, we actually have to spend time using that improved attention, for instance, mm-hmm. within our balance mm-hmm. control. And so that actually, I think, takes us back to Tai Chi,
right.
Because Tai Chi is a movement practice, but there's also kind of that mindfulness and meditation component to
it. Kind of like what you were talking earlier about, that whole body, mind, spirit, you know, kind of everything. They're all connected.
Yes, they are.
Yeah.
Yes.
Let's talk to Jane, who's giving us a call from Orleans. Hi, Jane.
Oh, hi. I'm so glad you're having this program because it's me. I have terrible balance at this point and have had a lot of wicked falls, which I cannot account for. Some that I may trip, that I do have diabetes, and now a little neuropathy in my feet, but all this started long before that, it seems to me. And there were surprising falls sometimes, like going up on the little stepladder to fix the curtain at the top. Always did all these things. Mm-hmm. And just fell off the ladder, smack on the floor. And went recently to, I finished a, intervention at the I guess I'm having trouble with my memory too.
How did it work? How did the intervention work?
I went for rehab.
Oh, okay, rehab. Gotcha.
Around balance, and did a lot of things that I couldn't do very well. You know, like walking one foot in front of the other, and definitely trying to stand on one foot, which is almost impossible, it mm-hmm. seems. And we talked about what I could do when we finished this little course. And a number of things were suggested, and one of them, the woman suggested Tai Chi. Mm. And I know that there are Tai Chi going on over at my COA here in Orleans. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I know if I get into that thing, I'm not going to be able to do that stuff because I really can't stand on one foot. I don't know that I can do it.
You know what, Jane? Maybe if you gave it a try and just did the things you could do. Dr. Mann, what do you think about that?
I think you are exactly right. So I think, first of all, Tai Chi as a kind of a balance intervention is oftentimes modified specifically for people that have some balance impairments. So, for instance, oftentimes we do a lot of the Tai Chi forms while seated in the chair. And then over time, people might progress to standing behind the chair, where we can actually hold on to the chair for some stability. So I think it's absolutely individualizable and can be modified to the specific concerns.
Know of any places where that's done.
Jane, you know, if I were you, I would talk to your senior center there in Orleans and ask them about that, because they may actually be doing it, and because it just says Tai Chi, you may not be aware of that. And sometimes instructors will modify. I know I recently took a yoga class, and I haven't done yoga in many, many years, and I was like, my God, how do I get... I just did the positions I could do, and as you come on, you know, it gets a little bit easier. So I would talk to them about it, Jane. They may even be able to bring somebody in to work on that with you.
Nice if they could bring somebody.
Yeah, they might be able to.
There are courses for people who do this, or, you know, people do many exercise and yoga things they teach.
Yeah, I'm sure there's some things online. But I think your senior center would probably know where to find that. Jane, thanks for the call, and good luck. Let's talk to Nicholas, who's calling from Rochester. Hi, Nicholas.
Hi, good morning.
Good morning.
I'm visually impaired. I'm just about blind. And my problem is I've not fallen so much. But when I first stand, I'm trying to get my bearings because I don't have, you know, the horizon to use. So what can you suggest about that?
Yeah, so I think certainly vision is one very important aspect of our balance control system. And so if that is something that's impaired, we have to rely on those other sources of information. So, for instance, the feeling beneath our feet and how our feet are interacting with the ground. So I think in this case, something like having appropriate shoes would be incredibly important. And as you stand up, oftentimes using a cane or a walker is something that can... actually, with a cane or a walker, there's kind of that stigma, and a lot of people don't like to use them. Actually, with a cane, the cane isn't really there to provide a lot of actual stability. The most important aspect of a cane is it provides us another point of contact with our environment, right? So if vision is impaired or we have to stand up in the dark, if we have a cane, that gives us a third point of contact with our environment and allows us to kind of figure out where our body is in space. Aspect for balance.
Yeah. Nicholas, thanks. I hope that was helpful. 866-999-4626 is our toll-free number. That's 866-999-4626. Our email address is thepoint@capeandislands.org. Non-invasive brain stimulation is also being used to improve balance. So what is non-invasive stimulation?
So this is something that we've become incredibly interested in. And I have the very fortunate kind of situation of working with one of the world leaders in non-invasive brain stimulation, Alvaro Pasqualeone, who is a neuroscientist at the Beth Israel Deaconess Medical Center. So non-invasive brain stimulation, first of all, it's not electroconvulsive therapy, which people oftentimes kind of
sounds
think it
that
might
way.
Be.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, ECT is actually becoming much more safe and very important for certain conditions. I think non-invasive brain stimulation is, first of all, non-invasive, so there's no surgery involved. It's very safe, and there's a couple different ways that we can stimulate the brain. One is through magnetic impulses. The other is through very, very low-level electrical currents. And that specific tool is called transcranial direct current stimulation. And so the idea here is that we can put two or more kind of spongy electrodes on the scalp, and we can send very small electrical currents between those electrodes. And that current actually changes the underlying polarity of the brain and ultimately changes the excitability of our brain. And we know that if we're going to do any type of task, whether it be a physical task, a cognitive task, whether it's feeling pain or an emotion, that all comes ultimately from being able to activate certain networks within our brain.
So do we know how effective that this is?
Certain forms of non-invasive brain stimulation, for instance, are FDA-approved as treatment for certain types of depression. Mm-hmm. We're also seeing a lot of preliminary but exciting evidence that it can be used for chronic pain. And we are very interested in seeing if we can use it to improve our balance in dual tasking.
And so what are the theories on why it would help us maintain balance?
Sure. So as I mentioned before, our balance, even though we think of it as kind of a physical task that we don't sometimes have to think about, we're actually using our brain quite extensively as we walk. Right. So if we can target specific regions or networks that are involved in balance, make those networks more easily activated, we might actually be able to improve somebody's balance control. Mm. And we've actually, in our preliminary work, have been able to demonstrate that. So we bring people in and measure their balance, and specifically their dual tasking. We then have them sit down, and we put the sponges on and actually deliver these small currents for about 20 minutes. And specifically, we are targeting a region of the brain kind of right behind your forehead called the prefrontal cortex. Mm-hmm. And that's a region of the brain that's very much involved in both cognitive and motor type functions, and specifically dual tasking. And we've actually been able to demonstrate in very healthy young individuals and in older individuals that just 20 minutes of this brain stimulation can lead to an improvement in dual tasking. Wow. So
last? Is it temporary? Does it, you know, when you do this, do you have to do it again, or is it something that lasts for a while?
That's a great question.
We don't know, right?
Yeah. So we do know that just 20 minutes of the stimulation has kind of underlying effects on brain excitability. So there are ways we can measure how excitable the brain is. And those can last for a period of time, maybe 1 hour after. So we are, for instance, excited about the possibility of perhaps doing this type of treatment in the morning and the effects lasting for a lot of the day where people are going out and doing their activities of daily living. And then I can also quickly mention, I think we also believe that if we provide this brain stimulation over multiple days, maybe over a 2-week period, that chronic change in excitability and activity might actually lead to plastic changes within the brain that might be more long-lasting.
That's fascinating. Let's talk to Pam, who's calling from Brewster. Hi, Pam.
Hi. I'm calling in response to an earlier caller who was having problems with falling. Mm-hmm. I've actually been in the Council on Aging's Tai Chi class in Orleans for the past year and can speak to its benefits.
Good.
And should encourage her to join us. This is a program that's run, I'm not sure who actually is sponsoring it. It might be visiting nurses. I'm not sure. I know our leader, Lauren, is a physical therapist. And the particular course of Tai Chi that she's providing at the Council on Aging was developed for arthritis. Now, I don't have arthritis. My sister does, and she introduced me to this course. But I do have osteoporosis and have tripped a number of times, and I'm particularly concerned about it since if I trip, I can easily break a bone. And I have found it absolutely a wonderful program. There are people in it from their 60s to their, I would say they're close to 90.
Wow.
And everybody does what they can. It's very comfortable kind of situation. My particular discovery has been that I probably have ADHD myself, and it's between having to pay attention to both how I move and what's coming next, I have discovered that sort of the mindfulness that's necessary in doing an activity has become much more prominent. Anyway, yeah. I just wanted to encourage her to look into it because it seems to be beneficial to many of us.
Right. Pam, thanks so much for calling and sharing that with us. I'm sure there's a lot of listeners who would like to check that out. So, Jane, if you're still listening, Pam's encouraging you to check it out. 866-999-4626 is our toll-free number. That's 866-999-4626. Our email address is thepoint@capeendislands.org. And we are talking about the links between cognitive function, balance, and falls with Dr. Brad Manor, and we'll talk more after a quick break. You're listening to The Point. We are discussing links between cognitive function, balance, and falling with Dr. Brad Manor, director of the Mobility and Falls Program at Hebrew Senior Life Institute for Aging Research and assistant professor of medicine at Harvard Medical School. 866-999-4626 is our number. Our email address, thepoint@capeandislands.org. Dr. Manor, there are a number of brain exercise computer games like Luminosity. What are these games designed to do, and what does the research tell us about their effectiveness?
Sure. So, again, I think we are very interested in cognitive remediation and these brain games because we hope that they can improve somebody's ability to sustain their attention, to dual task, to hold information in their short-term memory. All of those things have been linked to balance control. And I think the current state of that brain game industry from a research standpoint, we know that if you practice that specific brain game, you can improve performance in that game. And sometimes it actually translates to improved performance in other cognitive tests. So I think the media has really jumped on that observation that if you play brain games, you can improve your performance in that game and other similar games. I think what we are what the question we really need to answer now is if we do those brain games, does that translate into improved balance, improved cognitive function, and ultimately our ability to go about our daily lives safely?
Hmm. So that's part of the research. We don't really know the answer quite yet then.
I think that's right. I think you hear lots of media attention to brain games like Lumosity and other games like that. And all of these different types of games have more or less research associated with them. And I think our current question, again, is can it translate into improved balance? And so I think, again, if we think about balance as this very complex orchestra, right? Mm-hmm. If we sit at a computer and practice a mental function, probably the best way to have that translate into a balance intervention would be to, for instance, design a game where you are moving to complete this cognitive game, like the Wii, something
right.
like that.
Yeah, got it, yeah. Mm-hmm. Hey, Kathy's giving us a call from Katuit. Hi, Kathy.
Hi. I wanted to mention a couple of things. First of all, I've done some yoga over the years. I've done a lot of restorative yoga, which mm-hmm. is very helpful, which I like more than the Tai Chi.
Mm-hmm. Why do you like
so
it
better?
Yeah. Kathy, you said the yoga, you like the yoga better than the Tai Chi.
I do.
Yeah.
I find there's a lot more, being on the floor, flat on one's back, seems to be more reassuring to a lot of us.
Mm-hmm. That makes sense.
But also, what happened to me, I am going to be 70 in October. When I was 45, I was walking along the sidewalk. I'd been doing aerobics, kind of just normal wellness kind of aerobics, nothing really athletic, but, you know, I was in shape.
Mm-hmm.
And I stepped off the curb and sprained my ankle. It swelled up. Mm-hmm. A couple of days later, I went to the doctor, the orthopedic surgeon friend of mine, and I said, okay, what's going on here? Because he checked it out, and there was no problem. Everything had calmed down. And I pressed and pressed and pressed, and he finally said, well, if you really want to get strong, because I couldn't stand on one foot, he said, you should take up biking again. And mm-hmm. I had been a biker as a child. I loved biking. I've been biking ever since.
Oh, good
and
for you.
In my yoga classes, once we get up off the floor and start doing tree and different balance things, I am right with the 20-year-old.
Oh, good for you, strength. Kathy. That's great. Yeah, so I
but
guess
it's just amazing how much biking
improved your strength.
My mind when I'm outdoors, but stationary bikes are fine too for people who are fearful of it.
Right, sure. Kathy, thanks for the call. Dr. Maynard, do you want to comment on any of that?
Excuse me. One more thing.
Yeah.
I stand at my computer now because my hips were really bothering me, and standing at my computer using my core has been a huge help.
Well, that's very popular right now, standing at the computer. Kathy, thanks for the phone call. Dr. Maynard?
So I would just add that, you know, yoga has a lot of the same kind of background and thought to it as Tai Chi. And we have really been interested in Tai Chi, but at the same time, there's lots of research into yoga. And we also know that yoga is very effective at improving balance control. And so I think, you know, ultimately it doesn't really matter how effective a certain intervention is. If it's awful and nobody enjoys it, then it's not really that great of an intervention.
Find what you like,
Find what you like.
Beth Israel Deaconess has a Brain Fit Club. Tell us more about that program and what that's designed to do.
So the Brain Fit Club is a program that has started maybe now 18 months ago, and it's actually a clinical program. And the idea here, I think we can actually think of the Brain Fit Club as something like physical therapy, but instead of targeting a physical, maybe joint problem, we're focused on improving brain fitness. So we get individuals who may just have some cognitive complaints, so they're concerned about their cognitive function, all the way to individuals who have advanced dementia and a history of falls and maybe are depressed. And so we get a very wide range of individuals, and that means the initial assessments are very important. So we actually, each individual will go through a very sophisticated neuropsych evaluation to measure things like their cognition and their levels of depression and their goals. And then we actually have designed a balance fall risk dual task assessment. Based on those two initial assessments, we try to come up with the best evidence-based approach to improving brain function for that individual as possible.
Yeah. And is everybody eligible? Who's eligible for it?
I think people are, so in order to be eligible, you have to be referred to the program by your physician. But that referral can come if the person has some cognitive complaint.
Right.
That's oftentimes good enough for the referral. It's been a wonderful kind of program, me being in the research world, because we actually can see now these interventions and work that we've been doing translate into kind of changing clinical practice.
Right.
So once those people, our Brain Fit Club members, get the initial evaluations, we work with them to find an intervention. So we have lots of the things we've already been talking about. So Tai Chi as an intervention. We have a mindfulness meditation program. We've just implemented a music therapy program. And then certainly non-invasive brain stimulation and computer-based cognitive training. And the nice thing about this is that after 3 months or 6 months, we can do another evaluation to actually see if people have made improvements.
We'll put a link on our website to the Brain Fit Club website, so capeendislands.org. So we've been talking about computer games, non-invasive brain stimulation, so yoga and Tai Chi, sort of form of exercise. But what about the physical activity? You know, normally exercise outside of Tai Chi and yoga.
Yeah, I think exercise just in general, if we go back to thinking about our balance control system, is incredibly complex and many different kind of factors that contribute to our balance. I think exercise has been shown to basically improve upon every single one of those factors, right? So we know that exercise can improve muscular strength, muscular endurance, and maybe most importantly, the ability to generate force very, very quickly, right? So if we're trying to maintain our balance and we start to fall, it doesn't necessarily matter if we can generate a lot of force if it takes us a long time to do that. Mm. We need to very quickly be able to kind of restore our body's position. Mm.
So with that, with exercise, the adage is it's never too late to start. And I think from what I'm hearing this morning from you, that's the same with cognitive training. The older brain can still benefit from brain exercises or physical activity at any age?
Yeah, I think at any age. And I can also mention that physical exercise, walking or resistance training, those kind of traditional forms of exercise here, are actually have been shown to improve cognitive function as well. So perhaps maybe more so than any other type of intervention. If we were to recommend one thing for preventing cognitive decline and even rehabilitating cognitive decline, it would be some form of exercise.
Yeah.
And I think we're at the kind of the stage now of figuring out what is the best type of exercise. So we know that just doing the very minimum recommendations is better than nothing. But there's also evidence to suggest that perhaps more intense exercise or even progressive resistance weight training may be particularly helpful for some individuals.
Yeah. Now, people who remain physically fit through middle and older age seem to age better. Do we know if starting cognitive training at an earlier age will lead to better aging of the brain?
I think that's another wonderful question. There has been some evidence, certainly. There's a study called the ACTIVE trial in which people participated in a cognitive remediation type intervention. And they actually, compared to the control group, still saw some cognitive benefits 10 years after the intervention was completed. And I think that kind of gets at this concept of cognitive reserve or brain reserve. So I think from a balance control standpoint, if you think of somebody who has been in gymnastics for many, many years, right? As they get older, maybe their balance declines by 25%, but they might still be in a much better position to balance, and they can probably still do many activities that a lot of people cannot. So their kind of balance reserve is probably much greater. And I think we can hopefully say the same thing about cognitive training as well.
Linda is giving us a call from Vineyard Haven. Good morning, Linda.
Yes, I'm calling because I was listening to your program. My balance is very bad. I'm 73. But I was also interested in my great-grandson's balance. He was born with a frontal encephalocele, and they had to remove the encephalocele, which was directly in the front of his brain. And he has had so much trouble with his balance, I wondered if the non-invasive brain stimulation might be something I could mention to help him with his balance while I'm working on mine. Mm.
Sure. I think that is actually a question much better served for a physician or a neurologist. And so I don't actually have the clinical training. My background is in biomechanics.
Yeah.
So how we actually measure and control our movements.
Yeah, but Linda, it'd be worth asking your neurologist, your doctor about. They certainly would have some insight into that.
And I can also mention that
the first time I had heard about the brain stimulation, because I'm always trying to help him with his walking, falls so much, and nobody seems to be familiar with the after effects of brain surgery for an encephalocele in the front.
Yeah.
He has like 5 or 6 doctors who say they've never seen this.
Hmm. Interesting. Well, Linda, I would ask your doctor about that or make a suggestion of that. It's certainly worth looking into, and appreciate your phone call.
I can also mention that the Brain Fit Club at Beth Israel in Boston, actually there's no age limit on who can be a member. That might be a nice avenue as well.
You've begun a collaboration with aging researchers in China. Tell us more about what you're working on and what you're hoping to find there.
So this has been a really fun and exciting collaboration for me. So this actually started really based on what we talked about in the very beginning of this program. So people that have loss of sensation in the feet or peripheral neuropathy. We know that those individuals, if you have them walk and do a cognitive task, there's a much greater disturbance to their balance. But we actually don't understand the underlying neurophysiology, right? So why does actually distracting somebody's attention lead to a balance problem? And so we were just over lunch talking to a visiting collaborator, researcher at Peking University, who his main focus is using functional MRI of the brain. So what we wanted to do was, right, if we were to design a perfect experiment, we would want to have somebody walk and see what's happening in their brain using different types of neuroimaging techniques. The problem is when we walk, we're moving. In an MRI, you have to be completely still. Right? So what we've done over the past 5 years or so is develop an MRI-compatible device. So the person can lie completely motionless in the scanner, but this device applies pressure to the bottom of the feet that can actually very accurately mimic the pressures that you would experience when you walk. So this has allowed us to kind of isolate that source of feedback that's so important for balance control and start to study it kind of at the level of brain activity.
So when you look to the future, do you think cognitive fitness regimes will be just as important as physical fitness for overall health?
Absolutely. Yeah, I think if we were to recommend anything, first and foremost, I think we want individuals to be engaged, right? We know that doing some type of physical activity is better than nothing. Doing some type of cognitive or social activity is much better than nothing. And probably optimally, we would want to do something that kind of combines all three of those, because that's actually the most functionally relevant type of application, right? So things like Tai Chi, for instance, there's the physical part, there's the cognitive component, and Tai Chi is actually most often done in a group-based setting. And I think there's very, very important social outcomes of Tai Chi training that also contribute to overall health.
Yeah. So that's, again, why that orchestra thing, analogy you gave earlier. And you talked about the average age of the 86-year-olds who went through that research. And you think if they all could stay and stick with it, it's something maybe we all should give a shot.
Yeah, exactly. And I think I can actually kind of extend upon the earlier caller, Jane, who was, a little bit tentative about starting Tai Chi. And I think that's a very common concern for individuals, whether it's Tai Chi or resistance training or a dance class, right? There's always that concern of, this is something new to me, I'm worried that I won't be able to do it. If we think about the brain and the idea that it can change, all right, the brain is very plastic. It can change throughout our entire lifespan. I think the most important aspect of any type of activity that we would hope leads to a change in our brain is that it's novel.
Yeah.
Right. So the most important characteristic is the novelty of the task.
Just give it a try.
Yeah. And I think, right. So the just the fact that it is difficult and you fail at it and you're not very good at it is actually probably the time when your brain is changing and benefiting the most.
Dr. Brad Manner will be giving a talk about balance in the brain tomorrow, June 3rd at 1:30 at the Orleans Senior Center. We'll have a link for more information about the talk on our website, capeandislands.org. Dr. Manner, thanks so much for joining us.
Oh, thank you very much for having me.
Thanks to Tom Devlin and Antonio Oliart for production assistance in Boston. I'm Mindy Todd. Thank you for listening.
The Point is produced by Amy Vince with assistance from Jenny Junker. The executive producer is Mindy Todd. Theme music by Benjamin Verdery and William Coulter. The Point is a production of WCAI, the local NPR station for the Cape, the Coast, and the Islands.